Welcome to episode 3 of The Wedding DJ, a story of love and music in the 1980s. Jason arrived at the club to begin setting up his gear. He schlepped his Fender amp through the front door.
Hey, Freddie. How you doing?
Wonderful. Just another day in paradise, my friend.
We got some new tunes to play tonight.
Great. Whatever keeps them drinking, I'm fine with. Just keep that cash register ringing.
Jimmy was already on stage, setting up as Jason approached.
Hey, Jimmy. When did you get here?
Maybe like 20 minutes ago. See, I got off work early and I stopped by the house, grabbed the drum set, headed right over. And I wanted to set up early too, because I gotta get some grub before we start jamming, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I'd like one of those Bon Vivant burgers with a set of fries. Let's finish setting up and then we can go eat at the bar.
Just as Jason and Jimmy found two open bar stools, Kevin entered the club with his bass amp in tow. A couple of minutes later, Harry followed suit with his guitar, pedal board, and amp. In a short time, the band equipment was in place, and both Kevin and Harry moved over to where Jason and Jimmy sat perched on bar stools, waiting for their food.
Hey, Jason, why don't we get a booth so we can all have dinner together?
Yeah, there's a place in the front that opened up. Let's sit there.
I'll tell Freddie we're moving, so those burgers don't get cold.
The boys moved over to the front booth, took their seats, and got comfortable as Jason began reminiscing.
Do you remember the first time we played here at the Rendezvous, making Freddie the offer he couldn't refuse? We played for free.
Hey, but Freddie fed us. That's what made everything worth it.
Yeah, we got the word spread all across campus back when we were attending Ivy Tech CC. Sally helped get the news out too. That weekend, the club was packed. Even friends and family members came that weekend.
It always boils down to the numbers. Fortunately for us, the crowd consumed alcohol in large quantities, which successfully rang up the register. That's what made Freddie a very delighted man, and that's why he continues to have us perform here.
Harry, you mean it's not because we're such an awesome band?
Truth be told, Freddie was impressed, but not so much by the band itself. He thought the group to be just average, but that Jason had the real talent, the standout singing voice, and the handsome good looks. Freddie was intrigued by Jason's tenacity at bringing in the people without much effort. He had the likability factor. It wasn't much longer that Freddie came to the table with one of the staff with the burger plates for the boys.
I don't do this for everyone, but then again, I want the music to start on time.
We won't let you down, Freddy.
You boys won't let me down as long as the people drink. When that cash register keeps on ringing, I'm a happy camper. See? I'm smiling.
We like being the house band, too.
Although the pay was not all that great, the guys got a meal of their choice each time they performed at the Rendezvous. Plus, if they were lucky enough to have another gig that paid substantially better, Freddie would grant them the opportunity to go for it. Freddie recognized the boys' ability to keep bringing in the crowds, especially the college kids, who spent quite a bit of money at the bar. He knew where his bread was best buttered and worked with the band to keep them productive and to keep himself making easy money. Freddie was quite a bit older than the boys. Now in his mid-50s, he had spent the first 20 years of his early adult life in the United States military, reaching the field-grade military officer rank of lieutenant colonel. Freddie found significant action in Vietnam in the late 60s and early 70s, a time that saw considerable opposition to the war in the United States and bitterly divided Americans. Despite the differences going on at home and the vast number of casualties the Vietnam War raged, Freddie remained steadfast to the soldier's creed.
I am an American soldier. I'm a warrior and a member of a team. I serve the people of the United States and live the Army values. I will always place the mission first. I will never accept defeat. I will never quit. I will never leave a fallen comrade.
After the war, like many Vietnam veterans, Freddie built a successful life for himself. For the most part, he was one of the lucky ones. Many returning vets never saw the peace finger sign. Instead, they just got the middle finger. The memories of war, wounded soldiers from his battalion, those who paid the ultimate sacrifice abided forever, embedded in the cobwebs of his mind. For years, Freddie dealt with the confusion, the lack of order to the outcome of the war. All the while, he remained convinced of the miracle of how he prevailed unwounded or injured on the battlefield. The only significant consequence from all his years in the military was Freddie's hearing loss. It really didn't matter what band was playing at the rendezvous. What mattered was the volume emanating from the stage. Occasionally, the boys would get carried away with themselves while playing, and the decibel level of the band would increase louder and louder. And on this occasion, Freddie handed a piece of paper to the waitress.
"Would you give this note to the band?"
The note simply said to turn the volume down. But for whatever reason, on this night, it was as if the band was ignoring Freddie. The sound radiating from the stage was insanely loud, blaring, deafening, ear-splitting. The crowd was going crazy, and so was Freddie. Frustrated to no end, he finally went to the mechanical room and turned off the circuit breaker connected to the electrical outlets the band's amplifiers were plugged into. Suddenly, the guitars and bass were silent. Only the sound of the drums continued banging away. The crowd got angry, but no angrier than Freddie as when he walked up to the stage area.
"When I say turn it down, that means turn it down now."
The faces on the four boys turned stark white. For a moment, they thought they had just lost their gig, that they had been fired.
"Freddie, we are totally sorry.
We just got carried away with the moment."
"This is the last time. I'm not going to tell you again. When I say turn it down, I mean turn it down."
The boys apologized profusely. Freddie didn't need to further his hearing loss at the band's expense, when in fact, the boys knew better. They just needed to pay greater attention to the instrument levels and remember who was in charge and who was in control of the paycheck and meals.
"Okay, we're going to take a short pause for the cause, so go get your favorite cocktail. We'll be back in 15.
Jason, what time is it?"
"It's a little after midnight. The girls are on the restaurant side waiting for us. Let's have a quick beer with them before we play the last set."
Located near the entrance was a row of six tables up against a red brick wall. Windows strategically lined up with the tables at each booth. One could look out the window and see a picture-perfect view of the parking lot. Not the ideal romantic destination, but it didn't matter much for young college kids. The booth seat cushions, covered in burgundy naga hide, made it easy to slide into the booth. However, years of wear and tear and repeated use showed the age of the worn-out material. The tables, covered in formica, showed wear and tear as well. Over time, patrons had used forks and knives to scratch initials and other items into the tabletops. The rendezvous was in desperate need of a remodel, a makeover, a revamp, and for that matter, so was Jason's career. Jason and Kevin each took a seat in the booth next to their respective girlfriends. Kevin eyeballed Jason, raising his eyebrows, as if sending Jason a code to say something to Sally. Kevin knew Jason had not said a word. Not a peep. Meanwhile, Sally was utterly in the dark about a possible career move. Amid Sally and Jen's chit-chat conversation, Jason received a swift kick in the leg from underneath the table. For a second time, Kevin nudged Jason to tell Sally about the big decision. Uncomfortable with the timing, Jason scowled back at Kevin, nervous and frightened to death to say anything. Jason cleared his throat and took another sip of beer. Kevin glared back at Jason, mouthing the words, tell her.
What's up with you two? You guys are being a little strange.
Me? Nothing. But...
But what?
All the while, Jason attempted to muster up the courage to reveal his new plan. He struggled to get the words out. It all sounded like gibberish.
Jason, do you want me to tell her?
Tell me what? What are you guys up to?
L.A.
L.A. as in Los Angeles? You mean Los Angeles, right? Are you planning a vacation in L.A.? A trip for us? Oh my gosh, can we go to Disneyland? I've always wanted to go there. Oh, and the Pacific Ocean. Oh, the beaches. I hear the beaches are awesome out there.
No, it's not quite like that.
Wait, what do you mean? It's not like what?
I'm going to L.A. I'm going to see what I can do about my music career.
Jason has spoken. The clouds have parted and the glorious heavens have just opened up its doors.
Sally was dumbfounded, stunned, and entirely caught off guard. Jen was perplexed as well, wondering why Kevin had withheld this information from her. Sally wasn't necessarily angry. That wasn't her personality. Bewildered would be the best way to put it.
I would think a decision this gigantic, a choice so huge, would deserve a discussion. A dialogue. At least a conversation. We've been together exclusively for nearly 8 years. This kind of situation warrants proper consultation.
Jason had been so quiet about his plans. His fear of telling Sally left everyone clueless, except for Kevin, who, in reality, came up with the suggestion in the first place. But what was Jason going to do? Tell them it was all Kevin's idea? What would that do? How would that change anything? Jason was the one who would be leaving for L.A. It wasn't so much the fact that he was going to L.A., which in and of itself was not so bad. It was how the news of his decision came out. Jason had been so secretive. He hadn't even thought to confer the idea with her. The fact that there had been no discussion, just the two of them talking things through, challenged her greatly. She assumed they were so much closer. She thought they were best friends, shared beliefs, shared experiences that united them. At least that's what she had felt up until now. Best friends confide in each other about everything. They share everything. Their bond of love, which had been steady as a rock for so long, nearly 8 years, was about to hit a significant deviation. Their relationship, which she once thought would have a journey that included the traditional walk down the aisle in a cute little white church, just found its place in the land of limbo. If indeed their fate was matrimony, which many perceived was predestined for them, they were now in an uncertain period awaiting a decision, a resolution. Was conjugal happiness to arrive at the threshold of their destination? Would they ever arrive there at all? It was like a massive boulder had just tumbled down the side of the mountain, out of nowhere, and landed smack dab in the middle of the road, temporarily blocking any way of getting through. Just how temporary or permanent it was, no one knew. And not only was Sally affected, but the guys in the band knew the possible consequences as well. Without Jason in the group, would Freddie still want them to perform? Could the other guys continue to bring in the crowds without Jason? At best, if they wanted to keep playing the weekends at Freddie's place, they would need to find a suitable replacement for Jason, and they would need to find him fast, as soon as possible. Sally was speechless. In kind of the same way that Jason could not express himself to tell Sally about his plans, she could not find a straightforward way to show just how upset she was with all that had happened. Indeed, to address the situation here and now was out of the question. For Sally, this matter was private, and a discussion between her and Jason needed to be treated as such. Break time was over. The band got back on stage and began playing the last and final set of the night. But as the music started to play, Sally made a beeline to the front door exit, with Jen following not far behind. Jen also felt blindsided by Jason's revelation. She knew her best place right now was with Sally to provide all the necessary support she needed. Jen's unconditional solidarity with Sally was duty-bound. As the boys continued the songs in their last set, the band's tight-sounding quality was totally gone. The vocals became loose and off-key, wrong chords played, and song endings turned sloppy. The young college crowd of kids dancing up a storm earlier in the evening had diminished in half. This Friday night had developed into a scenario the band dreaded. More importantly, Freddie metamorphosed into a disgruntled nightclub owner, watching many of the kids leaving before closing time. Selling as many drinks as possible, up to the very last minute, was his expectation, because, for Freddie, the almighty dollar was the bottom line. With the announcement from the bar made, the boys played their last song to just a handful of patrons left inside. The guys packed up their guitars. The rest of the gear stayed in place as they were playing tomorrow night. Jason headed over to the bar and took a seat.
What just happened there?
Would it be possible to have another beer, even though the bar gave last call?
Yeah, sure. I noticed you and Kevin with your girls earlier. I also noticed the look on the girls' faces, especially Sally.
Yeah, she's not too pleased with me at the moment. And I think that's putting it mildly.
Jason went on to explain what he had done, or what he had not done, that upset Sally so terribly. At the same time, he shared his guilty feelings for not mentioning anything to Freddie about going to L.A. After all, the work at the club helped support Jason and the band for over 5 years.
I do appreciate hearing the honesty of what's happening. I understand, but somebody should have utilized much better discretion, namely you, my friend.
Yes, I believe you're quite right.
While he kept sipping and nursing his bottle of beer, Freddie started to confide in Jason like never before.
I came from a military family. My dad was a veteran of World War II and served long after the war. So when it came time for me to go to college, I chose the Army instead. I thought college could wait, and later I would take advantage of the GI Bill. That's what my dad did. He went to college, then graduated school much later in life. The GI Bill helped vets and family members get money to cover school costs. So that's what my dad did. And I looked up to him. I idolized him. So I joined in 64. I got promotion after promotion, and before long, I was leading a battalion of other guys in Vietnam. What people think is exciting and glamorous is not. Military combat is not a game. And I had to face the sad, stark realities of war as soon as I arrived. In my mind, I knew the possibility of being killed. Even more terrible than that were the friends, fellow soldiers, and even the innocent people who got killed there. Some only got wounded, but others were inflicted with such serious injuries they wished they were dead. I was shocked, surprised, and mortified at the things I saw and lived through. No one really knows until you're there in the thick of it. My dad never talked about it, about the fighting. I guess it wasn't what the men of his generation did. When my dad's buddies would get together at the house, they would joke, they'd laugh, proud Americans, happy that the Allies won the war. But they never talked about being in battle, losing friends, or the horrors of war.
Freddie, why are you telling me all this? It all seems so personal.
I'm getting there. Just be patient. After my tours of duty, I didn't know what to do with myself. I stayed in the military. When I wasn't on base, I lived at home with my mom and dad. They gave me a place to eat and sleep, but I lost who I was. It took me years to finally find myself. Back then, I didn't have anyone in my life like you have with Sally. I didn't have anyone special who I could confide in, sharing the best and the worst. I was living a day-to-day life, feeling empty and hollow on the inside. I put up a good front, and if you were to look at me, you'd say, what a fine young man. At least that's what most people said. If they had only known the real me, what I had seen, what I had been witness to. But like I said, until you're there in the thick of it, how would you know?
As Freddy paused for a moment, Jason noticed his eyes beginning to water up.
I was fortunate. I worked through my issues. I got help, and then when I least expected, I met someone who changed my life. It hasn't always been easy. I know quite well how difficult, rigid, and stubborn I can be. But hey, those are some of my better qualities.
Does that include getting mad at the band for playing too loud?
Funny. You're very funny. The bottom line, my friend, is we all make mistakes. I've made more than my fair share. More than I'd like to admit. But the important part, and this I got from my dad and his generation, is not how we make mistakes. It's how we correct them that will define us. How we come back from the darkness and how we make it through and move forward wiser than before. Don't regret the past. You'll regret that time you wasted so much more. You have a future ahead of you, Jason. And if LA is part of that future, then go for it. But remember, you have a beautiful young lady who loves you dearly. And that, my friend, money can't buy. And with regards to LA and all those Hollywood types, you best beware. You've lived a sheltered life here in Kokomo. It's a way different world out there in California. And to them, you're nothing but fair game. Now, it's time to close up shop. Get out of here and go home.
Jason noticed the rest of the guys had already left. He waved goodnight to Freddy, and with his guitar case in tow, opened the driver's side door to his Ford truck, hopped in, and drove on home. The weight of the world tethered his thoughts. Restless in bed, he tried to relax and go to sleep, but 1,000 thoughts kept racing through his mind. He kept thinking about everything that had happened earlier. How much he loved Sally, how terrible he felt hurting her so. Part of Jason didn't know what to think. Had he blown apart the nearly 8-year relationship with Sally? Why didn't he consult with her beforehand? Why didn't he include her as part of the decision-making process? The boys played Saturday night, but Sally and Jen did not show up at the club. It wasn't until Sunday morning that Jason decided to go to church to talk to Sally, and that was the right time and the right place, in God's house, where forgiveness is king. You've been listening to an episode of The Wedding DJ, a story of love and music in the 1980s. The Wedding DJ is written, produced, and directed, and narrated by David Murray Adelstein.
You're ugly.
Thank you.